As you know, the Mass, the central act of worship in our Catholic faith, can occur almost anywhere. In battlefields, school gymnasiums, hotel ballrooms, redwood forests, a beautiful cathedral as Our Lady of Lourdes. I remember just being ordained a priest and helping with the Mass when now St. John Paul, then John Paul, came to San Francisco and celebrated Mass at Candlestick Park. I've been to other World Youth Days in Toronto and in Madrid, where the Pope celebrates Mass often in a big field, in a park, on a beach. Now, when this occurs, it's easy to get distracted. I remember again at that Mass at Candlestick Park, where the altar was built right over the pitcher's mound. When Mass is celebrated in a gymnasium or football field, as it was earlier this school year when I celebrated Mass at Gonzaga Prep because the gym wasn't complete, it can be easy to get distracted. The years I taught high school, I would look as I celebrated Mass with the students in the bleachers. Inevitably, there would be some student playing with the girl's hair in the row next to them. There would be people kind of shifting back and forth, not knowing that I keep my glasses on to see distance. I finally put them in a school uniform because what happened, students would show up at Masses wearing fishnet stockings, skirts that looked more appropriate to a Halloween costume, and a student wore a duct tape tie. This lame effort at adolescent rebellion was curtailed with the institution or of a uniform. The dean would refer to these as unholy distractions. Not to be confused with holy distractions, a term that the Russian Orthodox Church used first to describe what is found in most churches, that is, the beautiful stained glass windows, the paintings, the candles, the statues, the smell of incense and smoke that can make our minds and eyes wander. But in the end, these holy distractions always bring us back to the reason why we are here, to meet God in the holy sacrifice of the Mass. From the earliest times, Christians were surrounded by art which reminded them that they were not alone on this journey of faith, that they were part of something larger, something we call the communion of saints. Now here in this Cathedral of Our Lady of Lourdes and through the efforts of Father Connell, we are restoring it back to its glorious splendor. But sometimes when I would visit churches as auxiliary bishop in San Jose and even here in this diocese, I wonder what they were thinking when they built them. What do those stained glass windows represent? I don't see any saints or religious figures, but we know that in the beauty of this church, our eyes are brought to God. And these holy distractions remind us of our need for God. If we allow ourselves the freedom and imagination to look at those men and women who've gone before us, who once were poor in spirit and sorrowing and humble and single-hearted and persecuted, we do what the liturgy is supposed to do, lead us to thank and to praise God. I think of saints like Martin de Porres, who himself was born out of wedlock, racially mixed, a Dominican friar, who asked that he be sold into slavery so that the money of his life could be spent on the homeless and the poor. Although the request was denied by his superiors, he asked for this because he saw in every human being not a color or an ethnicity, but Jesus Christ. Not festering wounds, but the wounds of Jesus Christ. And for this one saint, Martin de Porres, we can thank God. One of my priorities as bishops is the strengthening of our Catholic schools throughout Eastern Washington. And I think of Elizabeth Seton, the first American-born saint who lost her husband to tuberculosis, raised her five children while beginning a religious community and the first Catholic schools that were not for the wealthy. She was a take-charge woman who probably did more to help immigrants value education than any other teacher in the United States since her. Now, neither Elizabeth Seton or Martin de Porres, neither of them were martyrs, which means witness, but on this Feast of All Saints, it is a day when we celebrate and honor all holy men and women, those on the calendar and those known to us in our own lives. The origin of this feast day was, again, for just those martyrs, because in the first few centuries, persecutions plagued the church. But there were always men and women since then, steadfast in their loyalty to Jesus, who were given the grace and courage to endure even unto death. Read the lives of the saints, the peoples whose names many of us have, and we realize that each of the saints was marked by an individual and a very personal sanctity. No two saints were ever exactly similar in the spiritual gifts which God granted to them. But what characterized all of them, despite their different personalities, was their faith, their trust in the providential care of God, no matter what setback happened to them. They were not fair-weathered Christians. And there are people among us today, perhaps even in this cathedral this afternoon, who evidence those same qualities. Goodness is not limited to any age in history. Neither the past nor the present doesn't have a monopoly on holiness. No, you and I belong to a community that has a history of goodness and fidelity to the gospel. We are related to those who went before us, those who link their belief to those who went before them. We are part of a chain of holiness. And as St. John writes, I had a vision of a great multitude, which no one could count, from every nation, race, people, and tongue. Let us thank God for this holy distraction.